You are listening to Fanthatrax.
He's waiting.
Classic Star Wars and the collectibles they gave us. From vintage Star Wars to the modern era of the saga. This is Collecting Tracks. Here are your hosts, Richard Hutchinson and Chris Leddy.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Collecting Tracks. I'm Richard Hutchinson.
And I'm Chris Leddy.
And we're your hosts for episode 9, Christmas Then and Now. Well, Chris, it hasn't been that long since the last show, so, you know, I can't imagine you being too busy, not being up to much lately.
No. You know, just the normal things this, you know, during the holiday season. Just last minute shopping, going to sneak that stuff in. Just, you know, we realize how expensive holidays are and looked at my shelves and said, hey, maybe a few things could go to cover some of those costs. So, yeah, I've been going through some stuff there and maybe some gifts for other people. I don't know. Just looking forward to some time off. I've got time, week off between Christmas and New Year's. So looking forward to, recouping and the like. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, about Christmas. I mean, my kids are older now, but it doesn't get any easier. They're at that stage now where they just say they want cash.
And yes.
Especially with the wife, she'll go, oh, I can't just give them a cash. I'm going to buy them this as well. And I'm like, well, deduct it off the cash they're getting then.
I know, right?
Come on. But, no, it never works like that. So it's going to have to come to a point where we're going to have to say, right, that's it. You're old enough now. We've got jobs. You're getting...
Exactly. You can buy your own gifts.
Yeah. Well, I have woke up for the holidays. I woke up Friday and nice. We went down to Manchester to see the local Christmas market, which was actually pretty good. So I don't understand why Edinburgh Christmas market is like the top three in Europe, because it was absolutely dire when we went last year. And Manchester market was far better. So I had a good time in Manchester having a look around. And I was at Liverpool the month before doing a bit of the Beatles tour.
Oh, wow. And look awesome. At
Cavern Club and things like that. I'm not a Beatles fan exactly, but a bit before my time. But yeah, it was good to do. I enjoyed it from a historical point of view. And
awesome.
I'm now all booked up for Tunisia, so I've been liaising with Gus.
Ooh.
I'm going in April, which means I'm going to miss the next Echo Live show once again. I'm sure those guys put it on deliberately when I'm away.
Sure, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I'm all booked up. I've got my places to go all marked out. I need to sort out car hire, and then I'm all done for Tunisia. So expect some wonderful photographs from Tatooine when I get myself over there.
That's going to be amazing. Something great to look forward to, that's
absolutely,
for sure.
Absolutely. And then who knows after that? Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I thought for this show, we talked about, you know, doing it. Everybody does the top five, the top ten. It's getting towards Christmas and things. But I thought, why don't we do something different? Because to the best of my knowledge, no podcast has done a top five Christmas Star Wars gifts of then and now. And I thought it would be pretty cool to have a look at 1983 and 2023, mm-hmm. exactly 40 years apart, and to see what would each of us have wanted under our tree. Now, Chris, I don't know how you approach this, right? But when I looked at 1983, it wasn't really in the spirit of things to say, well, I would like me mom to have written off to Ken at request to Rocket Fire and Fett, because that's what I definitely want. You know, I thought I'll approach this as, I mean, 1983, I would have been 6 years old. So I thought, right, what would I have wanted when I was 6 years old back in 1983, possibly seven? And that's how I approached it. How did you go about that one?
Yeah, I had to do something similar because I was only 3 years old in the Christmas of 1983. So I didn't really have Christmas list, you know, so to speak. But I kind of thought of myself like, you know, maybe, yeah, in that like 8 to 12 year old range, you know, prime, like Star Wars, you know, kind of toy play, you know, time frame as a child. So I kind of looked at it that way and kind of looked at, you know, what was out there, what was in the catalogs, what was available for, you know, that whole year, you know, and by Christmas of 1983. So, yeah.
But when I did research on this, I was astounded to see how much was still available from A New Hope.
Yeah.
Or Empire Strikes Back. It was unbelievable. So I was looking, thinking, oh, well, everybody's going to want the AT-AT. I'm going to put the AT-AT on my list. But I thought, hold on a second. It's 1983. Think about it. You know, would I have still wanted an AT-AT in 83 if that came out the year before? So I thought I'll stick with December 1983 new things. So, and
I know.
By complete coincidence, the five items that I put down, I actually had them all as a kid.
No way.
And I didn't have a massive collection. My parents, you know, they relied heavily on richer relatives, I think, when it came to Christmas and birthdays. But certainly the five items I put down here, I had. It's not to say I didn't have a great collection. I had definitely had the Millennium Falcon, and I had an X-Wing, and I had Darth Vader's TIE Fighter. But that would have been it from the big vehicles and ships and playsets. I didn't have anything else. And I had quite a lot of minirigs and things. So, you know, that's probably true to see most of the people in the North, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, over here, I mean, same thing. Star Wars toys were in every young boy's household, it seemed like. And, you know, to think about it, I mean, I was at 4 out of 5 on my list of what I had when I was a kid, not necessarily in 1983, but several years later, you know, I was eventually had those items in childhood. But yeah, I know. I think back about, you know, even the, you know, for me later into the 80s and looking at some of the pictures of Christmas time and seeing how amazing, you know, all the presents were. And for me, like the big presents were typically G.I. Joe or Transformers or Masters of the Universe. A lot of my Star Wars stuff came secondhand from, you know, yard sales, boot sales, that sort of thing. And, you know, secondary shops and that sort of thing. But yeah, lots of great memories from childhood. And when you came up with this idea, I thought it was really unique and something cool to kind of go back and see, like, what if I, you know, could have made my list back then.
Yeah, absolutely. We operated on a one main present, and that's what we asked for. So it may be a bike or, I don't know, maybe it's an early video game system or something like that. We had one main present, and then everything else was just little things that filled up. Cool.
Yeah.
So I think the way to do this is we'll go one each. Okay, so I don't know if I intended to put these in order or not, but I started with number 5, but I mean, my number 5 could equally as be as good as number 1, you know. I was spoiled for choice. So my number 5 I put on there was the Jabba the Hutt playset, and I absolutely loved that thing. I thought it was amazing. I'm going to be honest with you, as a kid, I didn't care for Salacious Crumb. It would have made no difference to me if Salacious Crumb, you know, wasn't there at all. Equally, I didn't care about the hookah pipe and the ball. The slave collar was also a little bit pointless unless you had Bausch, because what would you clip to it, you know, because obviously there wasn't a slave lair available. But the Jabba the Hutt playset, when you twisted those, you know, the skulls or whatever on the front, the levers, and then it opened up to a dungeon. What a brilliant idea. I absolutely loved that. And I certainly remember cramming my Luke figures and Chewbacca, you know, inside there and slamming the trap down. It was just such a wonderful playset, and I think in the UK it was available for under £10, which you know, you would have had it cheaper in the States due to the, you know, the mass production of them. But
yeah,
for something under a tenner, it was still a really, really good price for the playability. You got a really large size action figure and a wonderfully interpreted dungeon system. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I love the Jabba the Hutt playset. It was going to be on my list too. For me, yeah, like I said before, I had never gotten one from new. It was from a yard sale, and I never had Salacious Crumb, never had the hookah pipe or the collar or anything like that. It was just Jabba and the dais there and the part where his fishbowl is and his frog bowl. But man, I loved opening up that, looking at the skull, you know, the skeletons and stuff in the rats or whatever was down there. Loved recreating that scene. Just a great toy, and I really think it holds up really well to today's, you know, play sets and stuff like that. It's one of those ones that you have a nice, clean, complete set. It just it stands out in a collection.
You don't see too many of them busted, do they? I mean, they're really, really good quality. You don't see any of them with missing skulls. You don't see them with missing door hinges. Mm-hmm. If you think of the amount of spaceships, you know, or missing parts of it, I think they're...
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, yes, you're being missing hookah pipes and things like that, of course, but not the actual main part of it. It's just such a wonderfully crafted item, and to the best of my knowledge, I've never even seen a damaged Jabba.
Yeah, I mean, I had one Jabba that I had gotten in a collection that somebody turned into a hookah pipe. And let's just say that experiment failed miserably. Mm. So that was a interesting one to try to sell on, and it holds up well. You're not dealing with a lot of paint loss and stuff with Jabba, and definitely a classic from the Return of the Jedi line.
Right, let's come over to one of yours and Kristen. So, no surprises.
I know, no surprises. All right, so I had to throw in the Rebel Commando figure because that's one of my focus characters, and I do remember getting my first Rebel Commando. It was either for a birthday or for Christmas. It wouldn't have been for 83. It might have been for 84. I love Endor. That's one of my favorite. That's like my favorite part of Return of the Jedi. So that's like the start of the Endor collection for me, you know, the Rebel Commando figure. Not a ton else I have to say about it, but just something that for me as a kid, looking back, you know, I love the G.I. Joe line, or for you guys like Action Man. So I always had my Rebel Commando mixing it up with the Joes. So
would you have been allowed as a kid to have had two or three and argued that you were army building?
The only way that ever happened was if we found a collection from a yard sale that had like a couple stormtroopers or, you know, a Hoth soldier or that sort of thing. I only remember, I think I had maybe two or three stormtroopers, a couple Hoth Rebel soldiers. I had a couple AT-AT drivers for my AT-AT. It wasn't typically something my parents, you know, like, oh, you already have that one. Why don't you pick out a different one or something? Or if, you know, a friend gifted me one at a birthday party that I already had. Never something that, you know, my dad wasn't out hunting 100 stormtroopers to, you know, recreate a, you know, scene on a box or something. But
I certainly wouldn't have been, even if I got one gifted, I would have been made to take it back and swap for another one. It's just, just bizarre. They just didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number four on my list then was, and if I had to have a second character focus, it would have been this one, the Emperor's Royal Guard. I loved that figure as a kid. I love the figure now. I like the on-screen version of that character, you know, the mystery behind it. Mm-hmm. I love the crimson. I love the cape. I love the, I don't know what the name of it is. Is it a Force Pike or something?
Yeah.
Is it called a Force Pike?
Something along those lines.
I love the whole concept of that action figure. I love the fact that head doesn't turn, which might sound odd, but, you know, it just makes that figure even better and better quality. So Emperor's Royal Guard has to have been on everybody's, you know, wish list. And at the end of the day, I did next to nothing in the movie at all. It did nothing.
Just background.
But I think it was just the popping colours of that. You know, and you think about the characters in the Jedi line, you had a lot of blacks and browns and greens. Mm-hmm. And for something to come out that was a vibrant red, you know, a wonderful figure, Emperor's Royal Guard.
Oh, yeah, I second that. Definitely one of those figures that I had as a kid. And the first one I ever got was from a yard sale lot. And it had, whoever owned it before had cut off the cape. So I was like, is this, I didn't understand, you know, as a kid, and I kept on looking on the card back and I'm like, but there's one with a cape. And then there's this other, like, I thought it was a totally separate figure. And I was always, you know, I'd go to the store and be like, oh, I can never see that one. But I finally did get a new one. But, I love that figure. The only example I have, one loose in my loose complete run, and then I've got a carded Sakuda Japanese one for that focus. But I feel you there. I could go down a rabbit hole with that character for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, for me, I'll switch it up away from the action figures. I'm going to go with the Marvel Comics Return of the Jedi miniseries. The first three episodes would have been available for Christmas of 1983. The fourth one came out in January of 1984. But I mean, like, I remember having those comics, like, ever since. My brother must have gotten them for me before I even, you know, really understood what comics were. I just always remember having them in my collection. And it's just those images with the three characters on each issue just being so iconic, and, you know, telling the story of Return of the Jedi through that medium. Just, you know, some of the, you know, one of those items that really pops from, you know, childhood. But I had to have the comics represented in this list.
Yeah, that didn't have any comics at all as a kid. And I would have loved them, but were those four issues the direct adaptation of the movie?
It's been a while since I've read them. There might be some things in there that weren't directly adapted from the movie. Don't quote me on that. But, you know, I should thumb through them again and reread them.
Hi, this is Ethan Sachs, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Right, so back over to me then. So number three, so I went with, I was humming and hawing over this one, but I've gone with it. A, because I had one, and B, because the Palitoy advert for this was absolutely brilliant. And it's one of the very, very few adverts I remember on TV. And this was the AT-ST.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I got one, although obviously when you get older and you see the AT-AT and you think, oh, I wish I had one of those. but I think I actually would have preferred the AT-ST purely because of the mechanical features. And to move an AT-AT or an AT-AT, you'd have to move each leg individually. And I think I wouldn't have had as much playability as it, other than a base for the Stormtroopers. So yep. With the AT-ST, at least I had, you know, something I could move quickly. It could chase a biker scout. It could, you know, you had, what, three cannons, four possibly, you know, two on the side, the one underneath, one on the top, from memory. So you've got a lot of playability with it. And I like the fact that you had, like, a resting position as well. And that was another vehicle that did not break. You know, I mean, there should be thousands of AT-STs with missing legs, you know, but you just don't see them.
Another
wonderful quality vehicle. So I loved it. I loved my AT-ST.
Yeah, I love that toy. Like you said, the playability is so huge. You know, you unlock those legs and you can just make that chicken walker, you know, go crazy in your diorama battle scene or whatever. Yeah, it wasn't until I think in high school when I was starting to upgrade a lot of my collection, that's when I finally got one that was complete. I didn't realize that there was a Top Gun, you know, a small Top Gun on the very top canopy until then. But I love that, you know. And I think, you know, Hasbro's tried to, you know, they've brought out so many over the, you know, the last 20, 25 years. But I think that original sculpt and mechanism, I think it's the best, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Now, your next item, if it's the computer game that I'm thinking of, I've got a great story to tell about it.
Okay.
I'm not convinced it was available in the UK in 1983. And equally, if it was, I wouldn't have certainly not had anything to play it on. So I would have been a bit disappointed with it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a stretch. This is like a what if scenario. I'm thinking, like, you know, that 12-year-old me, if I was back then, you know, being into, you know, video games and that sort of thing and wanting to get the newest Star Wars game. I don't have any, like, actual nostalgia for this game, but I just think, like, back then, how big video games were becoming with Atari and, like, all these other gaming systems and stuff, and it's right on the cusp of, you know, the original Nintendo and everything. It was just, you know, all early 80s, just like that whole video game explosion. You know, this was one that, you know, I could see, you know, seeing in that wish book circling my presents for Christmas, being like, oh my gosh, I want the new, you know, Star Wars video game. And, you know, after seeing the movie earlier in the year and just being excited about Return of the Jedi and stuff, you're like, oh, what could, you know, what could this game be like? And like, I never had Atari, but I'm sure like the game playability was not quite up to the hype of the video game, you know, itself. So
was this the game, so Return of the Jedi Death Star Battle, is this mm-hmm. the one where there was two different levels and one of them you're on the speeder bike and you've got to, you're basically yeah. going diagonally up across the screen and you've got to
I
get
think
to the bunker, and then it switches yeah. to the one on the Death Star?
I think so, yeah. I was looking at the different screenshots and stuff yeah. For this game, and that's what it looked like it was, you know, right. was happening in that game.
So if that's the game then, so I've got a good story to tell in this one. So I mean, all that game did was flip between the two. So you started off on Endor, and you're on the Biker Scout, and you had to avoid the other bikes. And, you know, you could shoot trees, and they would fall down and hit the bike behind yep. you. Obviously, very, very basic graphics. Speed up, slow down, and shoot, and that's about it. And if you were really lucky, you could fly through a tree trunk.
yeah.
But you had to be, you know, micro pixels accurate, otherwise you hit the side of the trunk, you know. And then on the next level, you flew pretty much identical game, but you're flying through the Death Star, you blow the Death Star up, you turn around, you've got to come back. So a friend of mine had, it certainly wasn't Atari, because we didn't have the Atari video game system in the UK, so it was, I think it was the Commodore 64 possibly, or an Atari ST, which is a different kind of computer game system. And he was... Well, he's now been diagnosed as OCD. Well, OCD didn't exist back then. We really yeah. thought he was an annoying twerp, you know. Just so it was top 10 score at the end. So he'd been practicing this game for, you know, for days, weeks, and he had his name in position 1 all the way down to position 10. And he was so proud to show me this one day. I remember sitting in his bedroom and I looked at the high score and I thought, oh wow, MGB all the way down, those initials all the way down, top 1 to 10. So I played the game and I came third. He was absolutely furious because he worked so hard on knocking all these names off the bottom of the list just to have his name. So I really spoiled his, you know, his summer holiday or whatever I was doing that. And it was because he was OCD. So I've never apologised to him. I do see him, you know, fairly regularly. Yeah. So next time I see him, I'll remind him about that. But
that's awesome. That's awesome. Oh man, love
it. All right, and so next one for me, back to another action figure, the Biker Scout. Now, I know a lot of people don't like the Biker Scout, and I don't know why, because I absolutely love it, and I do accept it would be better if its knees could have had a little hinge in them.
Yeah. But,
you know, keeping costs down, I think it was a wonderful figure, wonderfully sculpted. The blaster was pretty accurate, and I like the whole mismatch between the black and the white. It's very, very vibrant. So mm-hmm. Biker Scout figure has to be up there for me.
I agree too. That was one of my favorite figures as a kid, you know, and having loved, you know, Endor in Return of the Jedi, that whole sequence. I mean, that figure, that character just really stands out to me. I think, you know, barring a deep dive on some of the newer trooper designs and stuff like that, I mean, the Biker Scout helmet is probably my favorite, definitely from the OT. I just love that design. If I would ever do like 501st, I would definitely do a Biker Scout costume for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And what one of the 501st people told me, it's a good choice to choose because you can mm-hmm. sit down in the Biker Scout costume where you can't in some of the others. So yeah. That's a good shout as well.
That's cool. Yeah. Maybe someday. Maybe someday. So my number two, coming not in the figure realm, I'm thinking again in the mindset of me back then. I loved trading cards. I loved baseball cards. I would love a sealed box of Topps Return of the Jedi trading cards, full, you know, 36 packs, whether it's the blue the series 1, series 2, however many there were, I don't care. I love opening trading card packs to this day. I would just be floored to be able to open up all those packs, and my parents never would have bought me a full box, but you know, filling up my binder, the pages, and trying to complete the set and the stickers and all that stuff. I just, yeah, absolutely love the idea of maybe getting a box of trading cards, you know, Return to the Jedi trading cards as a kid.
Not for me. Not a fan of trading cards at all. It wasn't really a big thing in the UK. We had stickers where you would stick the stickers
in. Like Panini stickers and stuff.
Panini stickers, yeah. Yep. And they were all on football or soccer, as you would say. So we certainly, definitely around about the World Cups, of 1986 World Cup and 1990 Italia was just unreal. You know, you're just swamped with these as kids trading on the school playgrounds. But not trading cards. I certainly don't remember them. I don't remember them at all. But which is odd because they were available in the UK. But
yeah, they were. Yeah, there's UK versions and different. You know, there's some of the you know, collectors in this hobby have gone to crazy lengths at getting all the different versions from all the different countries, and it's pretty intense. You know how far you can go with trading cards, because you know, like, a lot of these other fringe type collectibles within Star Wars, it was easy for a lot of countries to get, you know, make their own version because it's just cardboard, you know, and they can print their own and stuff. So, but for me, love trading cards. I never really got, I don't remember getting Return of the Jedi trading cards new, like opening packs. But again, I had several friends, their brothers gifted me boxes of Star Wars cards that range from, you know, the first series all the way up through Return of the Jedi. Of course, they were all completely bent up and rounded corners and all that stuff. But I, you know, as a kid, I thought it was the coolest thing ever going through all those.
And right at the top of my pile, and I think this will be on top of everybody's pile, I'm going to be honest with you, the speeder bike.
Mm-hmm.
The speeder bike was a wonderful, wonderful design, and complete opposite to the other two play sets, because this is frequently found broken and missing things, and you know, there's no way that I would have had the flaps still.
Yeah,
I'd be, you know, just wouldn't have had them. But what a great concept of a toy that breaks that you can put back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's another toy that I wish I had two or three of them, but I wouldn't have been allowed it, so I would only had one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, wonderful, wonderful idea. Love the speeder bike. And Ben Coomba, a friend of ours, he has a wonderful speeder bike collection. And I often look at his boxes and think, you know what, they've got everything right on that. Absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is just, when you think of the Return of the Jedi, Kenner line, Palator line, whatever, you know, it's the speeder bike is right up there at the top. Affordable, multiple characters can go on it. It's just, you know, it can explode, all that stuff. And it, you know, the way it spring loaded and stands up on its own, it's up there for me. It's, I just redid my display and took my speeder bike out from storage and still got the flaps on there, you know, set it up and everything. Just love that vehicle design. So for me, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with what we've been talking about. It had to have been the Ewok Village. That's my favorite playset out of all of Star Wars toys. And it's still one of the only things that I have from my childhood still is my Ewok Village playset. Complete. I remember getting it from my neighbor across the street who is maybe 3-4 years older than me. And it was the last item that he had in his collection that he had sold off everything else, and we bought it at a yard sale and still have it today. It's a little bit dusty, but I gotta clean it up. I absolutely love that. And someday when I have a proper display area, I'd love to find a boxed version. I love the boxed art, with all the Rebel Commandos on there and all the Ewoks and other characters. Yeah, for me, it brings some of the strongest nostalgia from childhood is that playset.
Probably not for me, to be honest with you, that one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had nothing against the Ewoks. I certainly had plenty of them in my collection as a child, probably 3 or 4 of them, I would have thought. And I don't remember the later ones, certainly. But it's too reminiscent of some of the Fisher-Price treehouse things for me. I certainly remember my sister had this green house where it twisted and it had a slide that went down the side of it, and it just looked basically like a house, where, you know, a greenhouse. And I think I would have thought it was just too similar to that, and I probably would have thought, oh, I'm playing with a baby's toy here. However, I do accept it had a lot of playability. I don't know, just like, to me, it was like Yoda's Swamp. I wouldn't really have played with it much. So,
no, I
sorry
totally
to
get
rain
it.
On your chips there.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it might have been even just that 3-year age gap between us, you know, the different, you know, time frames we were in and what we were looking for. Well, I also used it as a G.I. Joe base and, you know, that sort of thing too. So it was had multi-purpose in my you know, playing. But yeah, no worries.
I probably would have used me most of the universe figures on that thing. I think about it. Like an extension to Castle Grayskull or something.
Yeah.
But I would never have had Snake Mountain. My mum would never bought Snake Mountain for us. So
yeah, I didn't.
Maybe I would have done as that.
I didn't have any Masters of the Universe play sets. But I mean, as far as the Ewok Village goes, I mean, I bought a beat up one for my girls to play with. And when we bring it out, they've got everything going on there, you know. Whether it's Star Wars figures, Barbies, Marvel Legends, any figure, any, you know, little character, they're filling up all the different spots and stuff. So even the beater one that I have gets use.
Well, I'm sure our listeners would have, you know, their own top fives, and, you know, I'm sure we're missing some blatantly obvious ones, but that's what's so wonderful about this, you know, that I hear listeners now saying, I can't believe you've not included the, you know, what else was I looking at? The TIE Interceptor, for example. That was another one that could have easily got in there. But, you know, would I prefer that over a TIE Fighter? Definitely not. And I certainly wanted the white one as a kid, and I never got it. But never mind. we're well over that now.
Oh, I know. There's all the what ifs, and, oh, I wish this and I wish that. Yeah, I hear you.
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Yeah! All right, then. So moving on to Christmas now. And I found this a lot harder, to be honest with you. I really did, because there's so much cool stuff. But equally, there's so much stuff that I'm never going to get, even ask for it. So I went down this one on a tact of what reasonably could I ask for that I think somebody may purchase for me. So the first one I went with was a lightsaber. And I love seeing those Master Replica lightsabers. You know, they're absolutely amazing, but they cost so much money. But I like the way that collectors have got them ignited on walls. And I've got a staircase that turns and goes, you know, around. And it's very dark there. So I thought, oh, I can imagine putting a few of these on the walls. And no way it's going to happen. My wife's not going to ever allow me to do that. There's quite a range of lightsabers available. So the one that I found was only £15.99 on Amazon. And it looks pretty cool. It's retractable with seven different colours. And I thought, you know what, I could have three or four of them quite happily for the price of a Master Replicas one. So I think a lightsaber is something I could certainly get away with. Still being playable, but also looking cool, and I could probably get away with it as being, you know, an item of furniture or something. Nah, I don't know. I know I'm trying to keep myself here, but I'm never going to get decorative item. That's what I'm looking for.
I hadn't seen these particular ones. Price point is great compared to you know, the Black Series ones and even the more expensive ones like you mentioned. I mean, they're great, fun. You know, it's multi-use. These ones, one breaks, you know, if you're fighting with your friend or the kids are playing with them or something, like, it's not a big deal. Whereas if they're fighting with the expensive ones and they break, it's a totally different story. Yeah, I love those setups, having the lightsabers up on the wall lit up. Maybe someday. I've got one Ahsoka Black Series lightsaber from Clone Wars with the blade. But it's not displayed with it. I just have it set out on a shelf, just the hilt. And then I've got a set of the Ahsoka lightsaber hilts from Galaxy's Edge and the Rebels/Mando ones. Again, they're, you know, pretty high quality, but you know, when they're tucked away in the box, you don't quite get the effect of having them out on display.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm kind of mirroring my then wish list to now, and this is like me now as what I would ask for if my wife would actually buy me Star Wars stuff, which she does not and refuses to for Christmas gifts. So I put the Black Series Rebel Commando figure that came out earlier this year with, I think it has like different face plates you can put on it, and you can mix and match accessories to kind of create multiple figures if you, you know, if you army build or whatever. And I really like the, I mean, I think the sculpt is amazing, and the artwork on the package is recreation of the original packaging. But yeah, something simple, just you know, the Black Series Rebel Commando figure.
It is wonderful. It is a wonderful figure. I'm not sure that I would change the face to the older Rex kind of character.
Yeah.
But I do really like it. But the surprised by the price, $34. Is that how much the retail for over there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen one at retail. The secondary, you know, specialty shops have them and stuff. And even though I'm a Rebel Commando focus collector, I have to have my limits. And as much as I think the figure is cool, like, if somebody gifted it to me, wink, wink, anybody out there, I would be happy to receive it. But it's not one that I'm going to go out and buy. You know, the price point, it's not ideal, you know, as with most things these days. But yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, those prices keep jumping up. But, you know, a lot of this stuff ends up hitting clearance. So you never know if you find one out there for cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. So, first time I've deviated from, you know, toys and action figure related things. So, I was a big gamer as I was old as a child. I don't think you would have the ZX Spectrum back there, back in the States, but we had basically all my computer games were keys, like a typical QWERTY keyboard. And still to this day, I can't play on a
game console.
Or consoles. Yeah. No, I just can't do it. I'm absolutely useless. So I put down Jedi Survivor because it's certainly a game that I would love to play. I really enjoyed Battlefront and Battlefront 2. I really enjoyed those games. There was a game that came out. Was Battlefront 3 a game? Or am I making that up?
It may have been.
Right. There was a game that came out, and I want to say it's Battlefront 3, and I was really disappointed with it because it leapt into multiplayer too much, and I'm not a multiplayer gamer ever because I am so bad. I just want to stick to a story and play the game. So, you know, I was good at Dark Forces and the iterations of that and the add-ons and sequels. But as soon as you go into a wider universe where you play against other characters, you know, I lost interest from gaming. So I thought, well, Jedi Survivor, it's, you know, it looks amazing, it looks absolutely mind-blowing, and I would be totally pants at it. My stepson has a PlayStation 5, so that solves our problem, and I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get on there and play a few games. So Jedi Survivor for me, although, you know, still to this day I will say that Dark Forces is the best computer game ever that was Star Wars related. But yep, I would give Jedi Survivor a go.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer these days. I haven't been in about 20 years, but I love the visuals from these games, whether it be Battlefront, Jedi Survivor. I've listened to a lot of the companion audiobooks, you know, some great characters have come from these, you know, these games. So I'm definitely a fan adjacent, you know, but not something that I could see myself getting into these days. I don't have the time and I don't have the patience, but I do like watching the cutscenes and some gameplay to kind of get a gist of, you know, where the story fits into the canon of Star Wars. For me, my number three is I'm going Lego, and I'm going to go with the Ghost set. The Ghost set isn't, you know, I would look or wish for a UCS set, like a huge one, but you know, this is a fun one, probably, you know, complete pretty quickly. I love the Ghost. Looking forward to the HasLab set, and you know, this is it's not too expensive. You know, it's $160 retail, you know, which sounds like a lot, but in Legoland, it's not really that expensive. But yeah, just having fun, you know, a set that I can build with the kids. And yeah, like the characters that are included, Hera and some of the crew there, just the, you know, fun Lego set that's not going to break the bank.
See, I was never good into Lego as a kid, ever. And I don't know what relation, some great auntie or something like that. I remember she had this huge tub of Lego, and they were all just big bricks with a big green board that you'd stick things on as a base. And I would spend time down there, but that was only because I was so, you know, mind-numbingly bored out of my head that I would just take the box out and start building these things. But if anybody bought it for us as a kid, I was never interested. And I still got that kind of feeling now where with Lego, I would put it together in, you know, as quick as I possibly could, because I just like doing that. You know, it's just like, it's like IKEA furniture. Just put it together as quick as I possibly could, and then I put it on a shelf and go, well, what do I do with it now?
It's funny, you know, it's all about the experience, I feel, with Lego these days. I have dabbled a little bit here and there, but most of the Lego sets we get are for the kids, and I've thought about jumping into some of these bigger sets, but to me, I can't justify spending the money for them, because, like you said, you're going to spend all this time building them, and then it's just going to sit on a shelf and collect dust, and you're going to have to, you know, get out, you know, your canned air or duster. And, it's almost like I love the idea of it. But yeah, so that's why, like, this set isn't too intense. 'Cause it's like, all right, if I build it with the kids and then they end up taking it and it gets blown up and it gets mixed in with all their Legos, I'm not that, you know, upset about it. But yeah, I was a Lego kid, especially early 90s with all the pirate sets and everything. I absolutely love those sets, and now they're coming out with newer ones, and yeah, it's a rabbit hole that I cannot put my foot down.
All right, then number three for me, Hot Toys Dark Trooper. Now, every time I go to Forbidden Planet, I have to stop and admire and look at the slideshow stuff and the Hot Toy stuff. But I love the Dark Trooper, and that all comes back to Dark Forces, the video game. You know, it's just still, I mean, it's a dated game, right? I can't defend it from that point of view. But I would challenge anybody of that time period to have played that game back then and then find something that, you know, had that same impact. I mean, some might argue that Doom possibly may have had that level, but I never really got into Doom, to be honest with you. I was just very much a Star Wars gamer. So that Hot Toys Dark Trooper is absolutely fantastic. I love the whole menace, and it looks a really angry figure. And I think Hot Toys have done a cracking job on that Dark Trooper.
Yeah, I can't agree more. The presence that figure has on shelf, the size compared to, you know, the other 6-scale figures that you might have in your collection. I love the aesthetic of it. I thought what it did in the show was pretty cool, you know, not very cool stealing, you know, little baby Grogu. But yeah, I love that. I love that figure. And it's certainly one that I've considered from my own collection. I might have something else on my list that might be connected to your choice there. But yeah, great choice.
Well, that's the kind of figure that's going to push your Ahsoka off the shelf one day, isn't it?
definitely. yeah. So this is a random choice, but I started thinking about the stuff that I like in my own collection, the different types of collectibles, and I'm going with a Cybercraft Workshop Captain Enoch helmet, one-to-one cosplay helmet from the Ahsoka series. I just thought during that Ahsoka series, seeing that stormtrooper with that gold face, it was just like really stuck out to me. Just something that I could see up on the shelf that would really, really pop for me. The character aside, you know, I just thought it was, you know, the aesthetics and everything are really cool. And this company I haven't really seen before. I found them on Etsy. They do a lot of helmets, and it looks like the quality of what they put out is really up there. Not cheap. This is not a cheap item, but just a cool thing in the collection.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit surprised by it, to be honest with you, and I wasn't 100% certain who Captain Enoch was, but once I clicked on it and I realised it was the Tutankhamun Stormtrooper, as I nicknamed him. I do like it, but the OT guy in me would think, yeah, I'd rather have a Stormtrooper or a Biker Scout or something like that, but yeah, really, I've got a lot of time a day for helmets. I've got a lot of time a day for them. I think, you know, I would love to have a row, nice row of all the Imperial helmets that they've released. Not too bothered about the Rebels, but yeah.
I know. Again, it's another rabbit hole that you can go crazy down, and there's all different, there's so many different levels of, you know, quality from Black Series all the way up to, you know, companies like Novos and stuff that make helmets that are $1,000 or whatever.
The Black Series ones are fantastic quality.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple in mind, Mando and Bo-Katan. And I think up on the shelf, they look great. And it's something that when the kids come down in the basement, like, I don't really care if they put it on, you know, and mess around with it, as opposed to one of those really expensive ones. It's a different story.
This is Charles Soule. You're listening to Fanthatrax.
Right, next one for me, number two for me, is a book. I had to go with a book, so I thought, like, there's so many different books to choose from. So I thought I'd go for one that I haven't got, otherwise why would I want it for Christmas? And the one that I went with was From a Certain Point of View, and this was the Empire Strikes Back one. So I do have, From a Certain Point of View, the original Star Wars one, and there were some good stories in there, and there were some terrible stories, which is what you often find in the EU. I don't know, have you read the From a Certain Point of View?
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Force-sensitive Dianoga, you know, yes. You don't like that idea.
Well, the one that got me laughing was the one where it was cleaning the windscreen on the Star Destroyer with bubbles, and they couldn't see the fact that they should. I mean, here's what I loved. If anybody does want to read a sort of Certain Point of View stories that are far better than these, go back and check out Tales from Jabba's Palace and Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina, because that was when Star Wars was far more serious. These are kind of a bit, they're almost Infinities-esque.
Yeah.
You know, where there's they've all got to be taken with not just a pinch of salt, but a shovel of salt. So that's not to say that some of them weren't enjoyable, because
they're entertaining.
Entertaining's right, whereas at least the original ones, you could actually imagine that these things may have actually happened off screen, but not this one. So I thought maybe The Empire Strikes Back, there may be some good stories in there. I haven't read that one yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. I listened to the first one on audiobook, and it was definitely entertaining. And I see that they have a Return of the Jedi one too.
Ah.
And I don't know if it's available in audio form, but yeah, I thought that was fun. You definitely have to open up your mind, you know, reading or listening to these types of stories. But, you know, it just expands, it fills in some gaps here and there, and it makes you think kind of outside the box when it comes to some Star Wars storytelling. I'm into comic books too, and I was kind of looking to see what had come out over the past year and something that I would gravitate towards. And in the Marvel Mandalorian series, we had the first appearance of Ahsoka in that series from, you know, it was from season two, but the comics are now coming out this year. So we know how comics are these days. There's 1,000 variants, all different covers and everything. And I really like the original comic cover, but I was looking at some of the variants, and I found one that was from New York Comic Con. It was a Virgin color variant, and it has I think it's Gist is the artist, last name, has Ahsoka, Mando, and Grogu on the cover, and I really like the visuals of Mando and Grogu in the forefront with Ahsoka kind of lurking in the back, and the Virgin covers, if you don't know, it has no text on the front of the cover. It's just the artwork. So it's a very clean looking cover. So that was the one that really popped for me visually. And I figured, you know, kind of mirrors my then list to my now list.
It's brilliant. I really, really love that cover. I've never heard the Virgin Variant covers. I'm taken away by that. That's like display piece quality.
Yes, and really that's kind of my mindset. I'm thinking, all right, this is a piece that, you know, I would want to display, you know, up on the wall or on a shelf or something like that, for sure.
I stopped collecting Variant comics. I mean, I still collect the comics, but not the Variants. And a friend of mine, he knows his stuff about comics, so I've got no doubts to disbelieve him. But what he told me was that I don't think anybody as big as New York Comic Con would do this, but say some of the smaller comics.
Yeah.
If they would have an agreement to print, we'll just say 3,000 Variant covers, and they pay the licensing for it, but then when they got them, they'd automatically pulp half of them and then release them in batches of 200 as being super rare to more than cover the money for the ones that pulped, and to make it harder for collectors to get them, to drive the prices up. And I thought that was entirely plausible, and I know there's a few people that have been driven out of the Variant comic collect market.
Yeah, I've scrapped the Variant comic collecting, you know, other than the ones that might be available at, you know, normal pricing and stuff like that, because it's just it's crazy. Some of these super low numbered ones, yeah, the artwork might be amazing, but you also might have to pay $500 for it. So is it worth that every single, you know, week or 2 weeks or month when the issue comes out, you're paying all this money for all these variants? Yeah, I had to jump out of that whole game. And I mean, I can appreciate the variant covers, but unless it's a key issue or something like that, you know, it's not really worth spending all that money just for basically a duplicate copy of, you know, one that I already have.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last one from mine, and I know a lot of people hate these, a lot of people do, but I already have the Star Wars A New Hope, and I have the Empire Strikes Back. So this is an A3 framed Star Wars Return of the Jedi movie poster, cast signed. They're displayed in, they are fairly cheap black frames, but you can put them in your own frame you want. But for the price of them, and for having something that, you know, is a poster, but also has some, you know, very obviously printed signatures on them. And as somebody who's not an autographic collector at all, I do actually like them. And they look well displayed on a blank wall. So I have actually asked for the Return of the Jedi one from my wife. So we'll see if I get it.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, absolutely. But I've got the other two, and I think this third one will sell it off lovely. Now, I do understand completely that people hate them and they say they're cheap looking, but yeah, the cheap looking, because they're cheap, they're only 30 quid. In fact, the other two was only about 20 quid. I was a bit surprised that I've stuck an extra tenner on this one by the looks of it. But if you take into account getting a poster, getting them signed, getting them framed, you know, you just...
Good Lord.
Exactly. You're looking at a fortune. So I love these, and I quite happily have a one of those for Christmas.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in desperate need of posters representing the OT, especially Return of the Jedi. I've been kind of perusing what's out there in the background for a couple of years now, and it just seems like original posters just keep going up and up in value. So yeah, like you said, I couldn't even imagine. Say this was an original theatrical poster, and it was really signed by all these people. I mean, you're talking, I don't know, maybe anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 plus. It's just like, no, give me this one, and it'll be a good representation of my, you know, love of the movie and stuff. I'm right there with you.
Absolutely.
All right, my number one, we're going back to the 6th scale. It's one of my areas that I focus on, and I'm going with the Hot Toys Luke Skywalker Deluxe from Mando Season 2, which has a slightly damaged Dark Trooper included in the set. This particular Luke, we all saw the episode, you know, peak Luke Jedi attire and abilities and everything. You know, I really like this figure. It's one that I don't have in my collection yet. And yeah, I just really love, you know, that it's that nostalgia for that, you know, how he looked in Return of the Jedi, and then seeing him show up in Mando, you know, season two there. Yeah, just a great figure. And there, a lot of them are, you know, a lot of retailers are have these for lower than original pricing. So deals can be had out there. But yeah, I really like this figure.
I think you've topped everything that I put on there, because this is absolutely brilliant. And the reason why it's brilliant is not just the fact it's an amazing figure. It's a wonderful sculpt. It mm-hmm. also is a perfect link to 40 years ago. And a lot of people like me are seeing this as the movies that we never got and we should have got.
Mm-hmm.
And to see, you know, Luke in his prime before he becomes an old man in the sequels was just something that we all wanted to see. And mm-hmm. you've pulled something out here that links the two eras wonderfully. And I'm looking at this now, so it's, you know, I think I'm going to change my mind now. I think this trumps my Dark Trooper without a doubt. It's brilliant.
It's a really nice figure. The Luke that I have in my collection right now is Hot Toys Endor Luke, so that's my Luke representation. But I'm really torn on if I need another, you know, Luke in the collection. But yeah, this would be the one that represents that, because it does bridge that gap between the two eras.
You don't want another Luke in the collection. What you're doing here is you're buying the Dark Trooper and it comes with the Luke.
Ah, there you go. That's
the other way around.
That is a great point. That's a great point when my wife asks.
Well, Chris, I mean, we could talk all day about this. I honestly thought this was going to be a 20-minute episode.
We always do this.
But, you know, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with all these, but I would love to mm-hmm. hear what our listeners think of what, you know, certainly their top fives in 1983 mm. and their top fives now, because I'm sure there's loads of things we're missing. And especially now, I went on Amazon and I had a look at the top Star Wars gifts that have come back with like 15,000 hits. And
I know. First
20 was utter tripe, so I thought I'm not going through it. There's got to be a better way of searching.
Yeah.
Because no catalogs anymore. It's not as if we've got the Argos catalog or anything like that.
But, I know.
You know, some wonderful, wonderful things out. And the good thing about it for me is that Star Wars is still going strong. You know, close to mm-hmm. 50 years later, and it's certainly shown no signs of stopping.
No signs of stopping, and there's no lack of merchandise to represent that fandom out there. So, you know, it's not too late to add to your Christmas list. So, you know, maybe take note from what we put on there.
Well, Chris, it's been a wonderful show. And I think the last thing we need to do now is to wish all listeners mm-hmm. a wonderful Christmas for those who celebrate it.
Yep.
Any other festive seasons and, you know, religious seasons that our listeners celebrate. And, you know, hopefully everyone has a fantastic new year, but most importantly, has something Star Wars under the tree.
That's it. Happy holidays, everybody. Take care, be safe, and have a great time with all your loved ones.
So thanks for listening to Collecting Tracks. If you want to be part of the action, stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FantaTracks.com or check out the free FantaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FantaTracks.com. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FantaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FantaTracks intro, Andy Lyth for our Collecting Tracks open music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember to tune in to Good Morning Tatooine, live Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook and YouTube. Check out FantaTracks Radio Friday evenings at 7 p.m. UK time for new episodes of The Fanta from Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks and Cannon Fodder, and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks.
Coming up next on FantaTracks Radio, it's Making Tracks.